Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved. Oh, I bet.
Amazing way. He's business's bad boy.
You're bad, and I like it.
Yep, he's one bad apple.
That's right, we're bad. That's right.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, and I'm glad you're here. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you'll check it out when you get a chance. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. Don't forget to subscribe to my blog. You can come and get the blog, or we'll send it to you. The newsletter comes by email. The blog comes by real simple syndication. You can read articles at my website. You can listen to thousands, count them thousands, of past interviews that we've done, clipped out just the interview all by itself. No commercials, just the information, and you can find them very easily by the name of the author through looking through the Brain Trust or by topic. You can do a word search and find what you're looking for articles and archives, and I hope you'll check it out when you get a chance. I'm excited about having Kenneth C. Davis back on the show, ladies and gentlemen. Ken Davis, as you know, is the guy who wrote the book Don't Know Much About Mythology. He also wrote the book Don't Know Much About History. And of course, folks, we know this actually isn't true. He knows a lot about history. He has a lot of fun with that title and sells a lot of books, and I encourage you to check it out. I'm very proud of the two that I have of Ken's books, and I'm glad he's a member of our Brain Trust. Ken, welcome back to the show.
Good to be with you. A pleasure. Thank you. And it's not I don't know much about history. See, I always have to remind people
I know.
The title is.
I'm just teasing you a little bit. And folks, those of us who are a little bit long in the tooth, folks, can remember the Sam Cooke song, Don't Know Much About All This, and that was a great song. But Americans don't know much about history anymore, do they, Ken?
Well, it's not just anymore. We've always had a problem with this. When I first wrote the book going back 15 years or so, that was the first time that people talked about openly about how much 17-year-olds don't know. There was a notorious survey done back then. But I've always contended pretty much that the 17-year-old's parents wouldn't do a heck of a lot better on a quiz. And it goes back a long time because even when we think we used to teach history, what we got was very often a lot of myth and misconception and a little bit of a whitewash here and there. And but most of all, it was boring. And that's what most people will tell you, that, history, it's so dull, it's so dry, it's all those dates and battles and speeches. And history is anything but that. It's about real people, extraordinary people, or average people doing extraordinary things. And when you see it in that light and when you see it as real people, becomes a lot more interesting, a lot more compelling, and we see the connections between history and our lives, which is the real important part.
Well, I studied a lot of history in my education, and especially in college, and I've always been a history buff. I've never been as proud as I would like to have been of what I knew about history, even though I studied it. It's one of those things, Ken, where the more you know, the more you realize what you don't know.
It's true, and the more I think appetite you get for it. You know, we say Americans hate history, and doing this now more than 15 years, talking to people around the country, I've learned over and over again that Americans don't hate history. They just hate the very dull version we got back in school. And if you make it alive, and if you make it real, and you make it meaningful, people do sit up and pay attention and absolutely increase their appetite for it. Now, I think you can look at the bestseller list to a degree and see that there have been tremendous successes in the world of history, biographies in the recent years of Adams and Franklin and Hamilton, a couple of books about Lincoln out on the bestseller list still right now, a new book about the Mayflower. I know I'm not supposed to talk about other people's books.
No, but, I appreciate you doing that. We've had Walter Isaacson on talking about Benjamin Benjamin Franklin. We've had David McCullough on talking about John Adams. We've had David McCullough on talking about his book 1776. These are all wonderful books.
Yeah, and I think that people discover that history isn't all dull and just dry debates in Congress. And part of it is, you know, let's be honest, education is sometimes wasted on the young. We don't realize how interesting this stuff is and how much more important it's going to be in our lives as we get along.
You know, Ken, I heard Maya Angelou speak, the great American poet. I heard her speak a couple of years ago, and she helped to put these things and these people in perspective for me. She talked about her ancestors, her parents and grandparents and great-grandparents, etc., and she said, these people have already paid for me. Mm-hmm. He said, what they did, their lives, their sacrifice, their work, she said, they've already paid for me. And that's what I think. When I think about it, it helped me to put all these figures, the people that we're going to talk about after this next commercial break, into history. These people paid for us.
Absolutely right.
And we owe it to them to keep their names and their lives in our memories. And I know you do. You agree because you wrote a book about it. Don't Know Much About History by Kenneth C. Davis. He knows a lot about history, and we're going to talk about it right after these messages. Happy 4th of July. A little bit of Steely Dan for you on the 4th of July. That'll get your patriotic blood going. A little great American band there. Doesn't get any better than Steely Dan on the 4th of July, right? Welcome back. It's 17 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Ken Davis. He's the author of Don't Know Much About History, and he's talking about you and me, folks, not himself. He knows a lot about it. Also, he has a book called Don't Know Much About Mythology, which is, I have the hardback version, which I'm happy about. And Ken, where are your books available, please?
You can find them in any local bookstores, usually online at the big online booksellers, in the public library. I love the library. I grew up in, didn't have a bookstore at home when we were kids, so you had the library.
That's right.
I have a website, which is don'tknowmuch.com, but I don't sell anything there. It's just an informational place, especially.
But they can link through, can't they?
They can. There are links
if they want to buy it. I encourage you, folks. This, either one of these books would be great gifts. And Ken, I don't know if you do this, but when I find a book that's a great gift, I buy two and I give one to myself.
I
give it to somebody. I do that. I often.
I'm completely in favor of that.
You like that idea? Huh?
I love that idea.
Two at a time. You like them going out the door?
Why just two?
That's right. If two is good, why not five, right?
That's
Surely you have four friends, right? Ken, one of the things that I'd like to point out is that long before the 4th of July, 1776, these founders that you and I, that I admire so much, and I know you do too, they really had been thinking about it a long time. I quoted John Dickinson, who in 1766 said this: freedom is born with us, exists with us, and cannot be taken from us by any human power without taking our lives. And he said that 10 years before the Declaration of Independence was signed. And in your book, you talk about Franklin actually tinkering with the idea of a Continental Congress 20 or more years before 1776.
Oh, absolutely. These ideas didn't spring out of the ground fresh on the morning of the 4th of July in 1776. They had been circulating around going back practically to the beginning of Anglo-America, let's mm-hmm. call it that. The first arrivals come to Virginia and to Massachusetts. And
1620.
They take these very, very halting baby steps, some of them out of self-interest, to establish democratic ideas. The Pilgrims, for instance, do sign this Mayflower Compact, and it's basically the first written constitution in America. And part of it is out of self-interest, but they do say we are going to, govern ourselves. They're still respecting the king, but they say we're going to do this democratically, and we're going to, and that mindset carried over, of course.
Well, they came here with an attitude, didn't they? I mean, most people who left England or wherever they left, they came here with a certain attitude. I want something new.
I want something new and I want something better for my children. I'm not never going to be able to get it back there because pretty much everything's under somebody else's control already. So if I want to give myself and my children a better chance, I'm going to have to do it in this new world. And that was an extraordinary act of courage on their part. There's no question about it. It was crazy, perhaps, to go off into this wilderness and of many, many people, of course, the early settlers perished because it was very, very difficult in the early years.
Well, and those are the people who paid for us with their lives.
That's right, and that's one of the things as kids ask me, or parents ask me, why bother with history? It's not going to get my kid a job. But this is our birthright, and these are our rights, and we have to understand the long and very, very costly history that won us our rights, because unfortunately we do tend to take them far too much for granted, and I think that's one of the values of learning history. We put some context into the cost of the extraordinary freedoms and rights that we enjoy as Americans, and they did come at a high price. Not just the men who die in war, but the thousands who died carving out a nation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And not only do we have these rights, but we have an obligation to stewardship of what we've been given too, don't we?
Oh, I think that's absolutely the case, and again, it's a question of what we all often just take for granted, and you know, we are a very blessed people in many, many respects, and that's one of the things I do talk about when I talk about history, is that we have to understand that with rights come responsibilities and a decent respect, as Thomas Jefferson wrote for what went before us.
Ken, there are number of things that happened that didn't happen exactly as people remember them. For example, folks, the Revolutionary War was already underway by the time the Declaration of Independence was signed. In fact, in 1775, was when the first skirmish in Concord happened. But in June 17th, 1775, there was a battle that was at the Battle of Bunker Hill. But there's something wrong with that story, isn't there, Ken?
Well, it was fought on a different hill called Breed's Hill, but somehow Bunker Hill got the name. And of course, George Washington, we could celebrate this small anniversary, was sent up to, arrived in Boston on July 3rd, 1775, a full year before the Declaration is adopted, to take over command of the troops there. The Continental Congress had sent him. Quick little story about Washington. One of the things
Can you hold that story?
Yep.
Because we're going to come back to that right after the break, folks. And you know, I've always felt that the key to history is to have good PR, Ken. and so I think Bunker Hill, the people who owned Bunker Hill had better PR for him than the people on Breed's Hill. What do you think?
Just like Paul Revere.
Exactly.
Brilliant at public relations.
Stand by, folks. It's 10-10. I'm Jim Blassingame. We're visiting with our good friend Kenneth C. Davis, the author of Don't Know Much About History. This book is full of good stuff about history, and it's fun, too, the way he writes. Tintil, stay with us. Happy 4th. We're back. It's 7-0. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with Kenneth C. Davis. Ken is the author of Don't Know Much About Mythology, and the book we're working out of today, Don't Know Much About History, Everything You Need to Know About American History But Never Learned. A lot of surprises in this book, folks. If you when you check it out, you're going to see some things that maybe you'd forgotten, some things you might have known you've forgotten, but some things that you didn't know. And Ken, you were about to tell us a story about President, actually at that time General Washington.
This is General Washington, Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army, sent up to Boston to take control there. The first thing he discovers, of course, is that these Massachusetts men have strange ideas about an army. They elect their captains, and Washington thought democracy might be fine, but not in the army. So
no.
he institutes a little bit more martial order. But the other thing he realizes is that they don't have a flag. they don't have a way in. Flags were important in battle to identify troop locations. So he designed the flag. Not Betsy Ross. George Washington designs the first American flag, and it was a kind of Union Jack, the coat of the British coat of arms, on a field that looks much like our striped flag. And he sends it up, and nobody knows what it is, and it creates more confusion than anything. So he has to pull it down. It's called the and they call it now the Grand Flag of the Union, and it proves that Washington, I suppose, was brilliant as a commander, brilliant as a president, but a lousy flag designer.
Yeah. That's funny. I did not know. I had not heard that story. That's a great story. I'll have to ask the people in Mount Vernon. They're going to be on. I've got a curator from the Mount Vernon home who's going to be on the next day. I'll have to ask him about that.
Yeah, if you go down to Williamsburg, they sell probably at Mount Vernon as well. They sell this flag, which is called, as I said, the Grand Flag of the Union, and really much more looks like a British flag than an American flag. So you can imagine the confusion it created.
Right.
And part of it is that in 1775, when he did that, Washington, as well as a great many other people, they weren't hell-bent on independence yet. There were a great many people who wanted to find some resolution to this problem without going to war over it. But cooler heads did not prevail.
Right. Well, a lot of what they wanted was just representation.
Well, yes and no. That's kind of one of the stories they told us. You know, if they had gotten two or three seats in Parliament, which is probably all they would have gotten as colonies, it wouldn't have really made a difference. It was a great political slogan, no taxation without representation, mm-hmm. but it wasn't really the crux of the issue. It really was more about who was going to be in charge of this great big country and tell people what to do. And certainly a lot of it has to do with the mood of these men at the time. This was the era of the Enlightenment. We can't underestimate mm-hmm. how important it was that people were questioning all the values that had been ruling for centuries. The idea that what the Pope and the King said wasn't law was a new idea, and it was very much the idea that empowered people like Jefferson.
What do you know? Tell us what you know about the 4th of July.
Well, first of all, we should have celebrated yesterday, 2 days ago, the 2nd of July.
Right.
That's what John Adams believed. He writes a wonderful letter back to his wife, Abigail, in Boston. The 2nd of July will be the greatest in American history. We'll celebrate with parades and church bells ringing and pomp and circumstance and illuminations, by which he meant fireworks. And he believed this because it was on the 2nd of July that Congress actually votes and passes Richard Henry Lee's resolution calling for independence.
Right.
But then it took two more days of wrangling to adopt Jefferson's Declaration of Independence, which was meant to explain to the world why they were voting for independence in the first place. And in the popular imagination, it's the Declaration, as opposed to a congressional resolution, that really excited people.
Well, isn't it wonderful, though, that, I mean, if you in order to put the things that are happening politically in our nation today in perspective, you really need to go back and study how these guys fought each other and argued with each other over so many different things.
Oh, that's one of the, I think, biggest and deepest misimpressions that we have, that this is a sort of colonial era Kiwanis Club. You've got guys that get together and drink coffee and they're all good pals. They were men with ambitions. They had agendas. They had regionalist interests. They had business interests that were often in conflict. They had different ideas about what a country should be.
And many of them didn't even know each other that well.
No, they didn't.
They only came together for a few times.
Some of them had met. Many of them had corresponded over the years. Franklin was perhaps the most famous of them, not only in America but internationally.
Yeah, absolutely.
But most of them didn't. Jefferson and Adams didn't meet before Philadelphia, 1776.
Hey, Ken, thank you for being here. Happy 4th of July. Thank you for all that you do for us.
Same to you, and thanks for having me.
Kenneth C. Davis, ladies and gentlemen. Don't know much about history. Wherever books are sold. Happy 4th of July. Don't go away. I'll be back on the other side of the news. You don't want to miss the next hour.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.